Hi, today is March 15th, 2020, the Ides of March, and this is World News Podcast 321. I'm Todd Agosaw, my good friend John Westfall. And today we're going to talk about tech tips for living in an outbreak lockdown. Neither John or I are in an area that is currently in a lockdown. And oh, I should mention that we have an appropriate amount of social distance between us. I just checked. We're 4,130 miles apart, so
we're playing it safe.
No social distancing issue here. Okay, so as I mentioned, neither John nor I are in a lockdown situation, fortunately. But, you know, it could happen. And so, and we know people or of people who are. And so we thought we'd talk about it to kind of come up to speed ourselves on this whole notion of what to do if we have to work at home. And I shouldn't say have to work at home, but I'd have the ability to work at home. Unfortunately, not everybody has the ability, but I know you and I do. So that's a good thing. So if you can too, here's what we've been thinking about. First of all, I want to say though, this is not about how to set up an enterprise telework configuration. That's way beyond what we can discuss in a podcast. And quite frankly, depends on what your entity has and policies and all that. So we won't touch on those. But we will talk about aspects of individual tools that you can choose to use as individual, or maybe choose to use isn't the right word, but have available to you. But first, a couple of mini updates that is related to the topic. And the first one is I noticed about a week ago maybe that my Chromebook all of a sudden popped up a message saying, synchronizing with OneDrive now. Now, I did not configure it to synchronize with OneDrive, so this is a big surprise. I did have the OneDrive app for Android on all of my Chromebooks, because I do use, you know, I have a personal Office 365 account, and so I do use it. So I was surprised that it was syncing. I thought, oh, maybe this is something new with the Files app in Chrome OS 80. But when I did a bit of research, it said that this ability appeared like a year ago, so I'm not quite sure why mine started to do this spontaneously all by itself. I didn't try to configure it. You know, I didn't do anything special. Basically what it means is that when you pop open the Files app, It's not the Android Files app. It's the Chrome OS Files app with the Android OS Microsoft OneDrive app, I think. But one of the things I noticed, and what it does is allows you to see your cloud storage files as if it were part of your local storage, which is kind of neat. So Google Drive and OneDrive are like right beneath each other, so you can choose either one. One thing I did notice is while it appears to work fine on my ARM-based Chromebooks, I do have one Intel-based Chromebook. And on that Intel-based one, I got a series of error messages yesterday that the OneDrive app was constantly restarting, so I had to do a forced stop. I haven't uninstalled it yet because I want to see if it gets working, because it is a useful feature to have. But at any rate, if you are going to be stuck at home and you have Office 365 in the office and you're allowed to synchronize it with your personal device, which you may not be able to, by the way, you know, might be against the policy. Something to watch out for, because if it starts syncing all of a sudden, you may be violating policy without knowing it. So be careful about that. I'm synchronizing my personal Office 365, so it's not an issue. And the next one is, I mentioned to John a few podcasts ago, that Microsoft Office, the unified Microsoft Office app, went into production for Android OS. And what it does, it takes Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and Notes. Not OneNote, but Notes. Into one app. And it recently became available in a beta release for iOS. So I installed that on my iPhone, and, you know, seems to work fine. One thing I was surprised about is that it auto-enrolled me into Office Insider program. I'm not sure I like being auto-enrolled. I guess when you install a beta now, you're just auto-enrolled into the whatever Insider program you're using. And the other thing I learned is, you know, John told me, well, my notes sync just fine with my notes, and I didn't know what John was talking about. But I finally realized that when I fired up sticky notes on my Windows 10 device at work the other day, and to the work one, and I noticed that, to my personal account, even though I was at work, and I noticed that it synchronized with this the notes in the Unified app. So it's not OneNote it's syncing with, which is what I thought, at least for me, but with Sticky Notes. So now I can see it on my Windows desktop, on my Chromebook, and my iOS and Android devices. So it's pretty close to what I need. I still can't see it on a Mac, I think. I gotta think about that. But it's pretty close to what I need for just quick notes now for you know, various and sundry things.
I'm very curious about that app, if they're going to bring it to iPad OS or if they're just going to leave it on the iPhone.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there's still the full standalone apps for iPad. And
yep.
I don't know if we've gotten any blog update. I can't remember if the original blog said that they were going to bring it to iPad or if they just said it was going to
stay. I think I remember reading that they are going to bring it to the iPad eventually.
Because I was just thinking, those sticky notes, that's the only device I can't easily access them on.
Yep.
Well, I guess I can't really do it on a Mac that well either, because I don't have the sticky notes app there. But I can do it through my Windows PC. I can do it through my iPhone. So I'm just taking a look at the blog post now just to see if there's any mention of the iPad. There's a few things that they mention are coming up. You know, the idea of Word dictation, Excel's card view, outline to PowerPoint. But it does not mention at all iPad. So maybe they won't.
Yeah, we'll have to wait and see. But it is kind of nice to see that it's more widely available now. And at least I know where my notes were going to. Mm-hmm. Which in a flummoxed
Well, heaven forbid they just live on one device.
Yeah.
That would just be crazy.
Yeah. I do wish they would sync with OneNote instead of sticky notes, though. But I understand why. You know, it sort of kind of makes sense. Or better, yeah, just integrate OneNote into the Unified app. But we'll see.
Yeah.
All right. Now, you've got an app that you've been looking at.
Yeah. So last weekend, when we weren't recording a podcast, my wife and I went down to visit our in-laws, my wife's brother and his wife, and see our niece and nephew. Mm-hmm. So we spent a couple of days down there and took some photos of the kids and did some things and some videos, that sort of thing. And the other night I got back and I was thinking about how I'd love to put together a little video, but on my iPad, which I was using at the time, or my iPhone, you have iMovie,
which
can do some stuff, and you've got the little apps that you can buy here and there that typically add a very specific effect or have a very, freemium type of model. And plus, I've just had situations in the past where I bought one of those and then they just get abandoned.
Yeah.
Where you just go, this is really annoying. I had a great app and now it's gone. So I started looking at what people were recommending for a video editing package for iPhone, iPad. And I kept coming back to people saying LumaFusion, but it's really expensive. And so I thought, well, let's see. How expensive is really expensive? Well, LumaFusion is $29.99. It's a one-time charge.
That's good.
They have three in-app purchases. One is the Export to Final Cut Pro. So that gives you a little bit of an idea of what they're targeting. They're not targeting a casual video person, they're targeting someone who might want to do, you know, prosumer or professional video editing.
Mm-hmm.
And so that unlocks at $20. So if you want the full, you know, app plus Final Cut Pro and Export, you've got $50 right there. And then they have these story blocks that you can buy a subscription to that service for, I think it's a month or a year or 6 months or a year, that have pre-built loops and audio and background transitions and just like a ton of kind of cool stock photos and stock video animation. So I thought, well, you know, I haven't bought an expensive app in a while. So I downloaded it and I started playing with it. In about 25 minutes, I had a really cool video that I was able to do transitions between photos, put in subtitles of what my two-year-old niece was saying, do a couple of title pages, and a few other nice little effects. And I got that exported and sent it to my relatives, and they very much enjoyed it, and I'm enjoying now that I have that video for posterity. So, excuse me, it is a little bit expensive, but it's kind of worth it if you want to be able to do full-featured video. And one of the things that we're going to be talking about is, you know, occasionally you have to now put things together for coworkers, and you might have to take pictures and say, you know, put this on here and do this there and all those things. So it might be a good use of some money if you have it to drop on it. So LumaFusion.
Yeah, that, you know, in fact, it's funny when John said it's kind of pricey. When he told me the price, I was kind of taken aback. And then and then later, as our conversation progressed before the podcast, I told John, you know, in old days, we probably would have paid $300-$400 for something like this.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so, no doubt.
So $30, no recurring fees. That's a good deal.
Video editing on your phone and on your PC, that's just, it's a crazy idea that...
Does it work on the iPad too?
Yeah, and it looks great on both and runs great on both. It does not sync your projects. So if you're building a project on one, you need to, and that kind of makes sense because these projects can get a little bit big. The one that I was working on just with the video clips and everything, when I exported it to Final Cut Pro for a 45-second video, all of the source files and media, it was about an 80 megabyte download from my phone to my computer. So it can be a little bit, large if you try to iCloud sync your project changes.
Hey, by the way, John, as you were speaking, I just saw Apple News flash across my Mac, and it says Amazon is saying, I can't find the article now, I just saw the alert. It says Amazon reports that they are out of household products. So, yeah.
Well, and MSN and Washington Post have both run stories on these enterprising individuals that went on multi-state trips to buy up all of the hand sanitizer and anything else they could get their hands on to then sell it on Amazon and eBay.
Yeah.
And of course, as we know, as soon as Amazon and eBay started seeing hand sanitizer going for $50 a bottle, they shut down all of those accounts, or as many as they could.
Right.
So I'm not quite sure. I've read a couple of these articles. I'm not sure if they're going for... feel sorry for these people, because I don't think you're going to get a lot of sympathy for these people. But it is interesting. One of the titles was something like, this man now owns $17,000 of hand sanitizer and has no one to sell it to.
I saw that.
So, yeah, it's an interesting world we're living in right now when it comes to household products.
It certainly is. Oh, here it is. I found it. So CNBC is reporting, Amazon says it is out of stock on household items and... delivery delayed due to coronavirus demand. So they said many household items out of stock, you know, blah, blah, blah. Shipping times is slower. And so, you know, not good news anywhere. And of course, anybody who hasn't been sleeping under a rock for the last 2 months has probably gone to a big box store or just a regular supermarket or something and noticed that there were some shelves that were a little bit emptier than usual, sometimes a lot emptier than usual. So, oh, this is interesting. It says Amazon is also working on delivering coronavirus test kits. So there you go. Okay, back to our regularly scheduled program. See, now, John, you might make me spend $30. You're a bad person.
I kind of am sometimes. Well, you know, I try to do it for a good cause. You know, being able to put together cool things and put them out there. One of my colleagues, not at my university, but another professor elsewhere, was joking about how Zoom video conferencing allows you to put a background photo in, and it, you know, it'll isolate you in the foreground and put the background behind you. And so he was talking about how excited he was to be lecturing from Hogwarts this spring because he had a picture of the Hogwarts castle in the background, and that was going to be his lecture background.
That's funny. You know, speaking of Hogwarts, you know, my daughter spent a semester abroad her junior year of college at a place called Keele University in England. And Keele University is almost what you would expect a university in England to look like. I think their administration building, Keele Hall, looks like something out of Harry Potter, and, you know, from the Hogwarts. The only thing it's missing is a wall and a sea, you know, and a harbor with ships flying in. But yeah, go look up Kiel, K-E-E-L-E University, and go look up Kiel Hall. I think you'll see what I mean. Yeah, interesting problems. Okay, so what we've got is a couple of tips, maybe, that you hopefully thought about, but if you haven't, you know, go think about it. The first is learn what mobile, web-based and mobile version of software you use at work are available to you, and learn, and more importantly, learn what limitations they might have compared to desktop versions. Because I think, John, I don't know if you've used the web versions or the mobile versions of Microsoft Office 365 components, for example, but while they're very, very good and they've been improving leaps and bounds over the last couple of years especially, there's still some things they can't do. Like I think Word for iOS doesn't do, and even the web version, I think it doesn't do indexes, for example. And I'm not sure it does figures and captioning for figures and things like that. So you can do a lot, but if you're going to write, you know, a dissertation, you might be a little, you might be limited to what you can do. Like the lack of figures and captioning, I think, would be a big one.
Mm-hmm.
And indexes and table of contents and a whole bunch of other things. But I don't know, John.
It would be a good time. It would be a good time to learn Markdown.
Yeah, there you go.
And, you know, use that for some of those features. Because in the project, the super secret project that I'm working on, I'm using Markdown a lot these days. And to be able to do figure captioning just through short, you know, commands and all that, it's pretty nice. So if you cannot use a full-featured word processor, you might take a step in the opposite direction and go back to a minimal, you know, what we used to have before we had word processors, the idea that you would write something and then it would be formatted later through an actual word processor, or, you know, someone would typeset it for you.
Hey, John, since you're way younger and an actual university professor, what are graduate students or even undergrads required to submit final theses and dissertations on? Can they use Word and things like that, or do you have to use some kind of a Markdown system?
They can use Word.
Okay. That makes sense.
We've gotten to that point, yep.
Yeah.
And even when I submitted my dissertation 11 years ago, I could use Word.
I'm so old. Well, first of all, we didn't have Word. It didn't exist yet. But I'm so old that we had...
Did you have words?
We had
like
words.
The actual things? Okay.
They were short words, but we had words.
So you were just off pictographs.
Yeah.
Throughout the world. That's
yeah.
good. That's-
yeah. Well, and we had to hand do our graphs. But at any rate, you know, with... God, I don't even know what to call it anymore. Not stencils. There's like little lines that you lay down on paper. At any rate, at one university, however, I did have what people probably don't even know what they are now. It's NROF, TROF. To do our theses and dissertations on. And the way we had it set up, because only at the time, I was at UC Santa Barbara, and I think only UC, it was either UCSD or UCLA. I think it was UCSD. I think only UCSD had a photo typesetter. And so we would NROF to get, you know, paper drafts to edit, because it was hard to edit on a screen back then. And then we'd use TROF to cut it to tape. And have the tape trucked down to UCSD, where they would run it through their photo typesetter and then send the paper back. At any rate, it was a lot more involved than it is nowadays. I think it's easier with Word. See what you missed, John? Uh-oh, I think John froze.
No, I might be here.
He's in shock.
I am. It's just so scary.
Yeah, see what it was like in the Stone Age? It was a very different world. Of course, there was also... Well, coronavirus or novel coronavirus free world, so that was good.
Well, you know, the other thing that I can tell you about is that growing up, I lived with briefly a CompuGraphic typesetting photocomposition machine. My father owned one, and I should see if I can figure out which model he actually had, because those things were beasts.
I can only imagine. I've never seen one in person.
I'll see if I can find a photo of something that looks close to what I recall as a child. But they were pretty amazing to be able to lay out text in a way that, you know, now we really take for granted that we don't have to deal with that.
Although, you know, I think the old devices and software, did kerning better than we do now, you know, for the intra word spacing and all that.
Yeah, they probably did.
I think. But anyway. Yeah,
professional layout machines were better at certain things just because it was their single purpose.
Single purpose devices, yeah. It's hard to beat. Next up, this may sound kind of obvious, but even some of our friends, you know, we have to remind them when they're on a podcast to put on a headset or earbuds or use a microphone, because quite honestly, you may think you sound great on your built-in microphone. Generally, you don't. Especially if you weave and bob around your microphone, as many people do. Many people, for instance, look away. Let's see if I can do this. So I'm at about a 30 degree angle from my microphone. I have a dedicated USB, whatever the heck microphone it is. So I'm going to move my face away from it now. I'm turning my head away. John, can you hear the difference as I turn my head away from the microphone and then come back to it?
There's a pretty pronounced difference there.
Yeah. So, you know, but people do that. Most of us don't stand still with our head rock steady looking at a person's face, because basically it's unnerving for most of the time. But if you do that when you're recording a podcast or just speaking for a teleconference, your audio is going to be pretty bad. And if you are in a room with more than one person, as you know, you might be if you're at home or something. I mean, you could probably hear stuff around me since I'm recording this at home. But at least if you have a dedicated mic, you can potentially limit that surround noise depending on the kind of mic you have. And if you're using a headset like John is, I think. I see he has a headset. I don't know if that's... You're using that microphone? You're using a microphone somewhere else?
Yep. I'm using a microphone on a headset.
Yeah, because I think John sounds good. You know, you got a much better chance of being understood. You know, you've probably all been on voice conference calls where people obviously had a microphone way too far away on the desk, or they had a conference phone, but the desk is 12 feet long and the conference phone is in the middle. So be aware that more than video, unless you're demonstrating something, you know, visually, your audio is the key. People can get by without seeing your face. They can't really get by without hearing you.
Some people don't want to see your face.
That's true.
Yeah.
And vice versa.
Yeah.
So, you know, almost anything you can buy, you know, a $15 headset with a microphone on is probably better than what you've got on your device. And certainly it'll be closer to your mouth. So, you know, do that. And also, you know, experiment, you know, with your friends about how to use your mic. Because one of the things we found is that a lot of people with a boom mic, for example, you know, the kind that come down and sit in front of your head, face somewhere. A lot of people put the microphone directly in front of their lips, and you really don't want to do that. Because basically, you're going to get a lot of sibilance. Like, I know I have a lot of sibilance when I speak. And so, you're going to hear a lot of tss, you know, sibilant kind of sounds coming out of it. You're going to hear a lot of pops. So, you know, have them have the microphone maybe an inch below their lips or an inch above. Probably not above, because then it'll hit their nose. But, or you hear them snort when they laugh, you know, I don't know. But anyway, experiment where the microphone works best for you. And John's headset microphone doesn't have a boom, but it's working fine.
Yeah, this one is a surprisingly good option for it being a headset mic. We've only had one friend ever say that he really notices a difference when I use this versus the USB microphone that I have.
Yeah.
And this is just a Beats Solo 2 or Solo 3, I forget which generation this is, headset.
Yeah.
And it works very nicely. It's a Solo 3.
Okay. So. All right. The next one is, again, this is for a home system. You know, you're stuck at home and you need to work, and you're able to work, more importantly, you're able to work from home. Is if you don't already have one, it's probably a really good idea to set up a second display with your home computer. I recently bought, I mean, if you can't, or if you don't want to buy a regular monitor to plug in, I bought a portable 15.6 inch USB-C display. It can be both powered and displayed on a single cable, although quite frankly, it works better with a separate power cable going to the USB-A in my case. But it's really quite handy. I can set it up anywhere really quickly. I can tear it down quickly. You know, I can just kind of put it on a little stand so I can put it away when I'm not using it. And John, you've got another option for people with an iPad, at least.
Yeah, so when I was traveling last weekend, I was still working on Super Secret Project. Mm-hmm. So I needed to do a little bit of work in a hotel room. And I had my MacBook and I had my iPad Pro, and I thought, well, let's dig out Duet screen extending again, because I hadn't used it in about a year. So I got it up and running, and it is really smooth. And I've heard some criticisms of Sidecar. I don't have a new enough MacBook to use that feature, the built-in way to extend. I know, it's crazy. My MacBook's a 2015. I don't think it supports it. Really? But I've been, I'll double check now, but yeah. I'm pretty sure it does not. But I was pretty happy with that. And so that can also be a very useful thing for you. I like Duet because it also will let you basically flick away the Duet app and still use an app on your iPad and then back to it. So that's sort of a nice feature as well. But yeah, I'm looking on Sidecar to see. I guess how would I know if I had Sidecar?
I think it's in your settings. Here, let me go to mine. Or you can just go to help and type in Sidecar.
I guess that's true.
Yeah. I did the search loop. It's so and it brings up the Sidecar settings, and it says show sidebar, select device, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, I do not have that. So.
Okay. And, you know, I do agree with you, though. You know, I've been using Sidecar off and on. And, you know, people tell me you can still use Touch on the iPad with Sidecar, but I can't. And I'm looking at the config, and I don't see why, you know, anything that would let me do that. So it's a little bit puzzling. But with Duet, as you said, it works fine. See, it does say enable double tap on Apple Pencil. I guess I should try that. And it can show the touch bar on the bottom of the iPad for Sidecar. Okay, so these are the options once you connect Sidecar to a Mac that supports it. You can show the sidebar where you want it, on the right. Let me see what the choices are. Right or left. I choose right for whatever reason. And you can also choose where to show the touch bar, atop or bottom. And as I've told John, and John has a touch bar, so he knows what I mean. I always poo-pooed the touch bar idea on the MacBook Pro. I find I actually use it now that I have one.
And I actually do not have one.
Oh, I thought you did.
Buy that. So I'm looking forward to when I next upgrade getting it.
Yeah. Yeah, and you'll get a good keyboard, unlike the stupid butterfly keyboard I have. But anyway, that aside, that rant is a different podcast, which I think I already did. But yeah, but the big difference aside from functionality is that Sidecar is free if macOS supports it on your device, whereas Duet is what, $20 now, something like that.
It's somewhere around there. I actually don't remember because I've used Duet long enough, or I've owned it long enough that I don't remember how much I paid for it.
I will go look it up. Duet display in the App Store. No, it is cheaper now. I think I paid $20 when I got it, but it is $9.99. Oh, wait a minute. There's in-app purchases, but it doesn't say what the in-app purchases are. Oh, there we go. Oh, what? I don't know what the difference is with Duet Pro and Duet Air.
Yeah, there are some interesting things that I'm not sure what they do now.
Yeah, but
for all I know, they changed it where if you bought it at a certain point, you and I might have features that other people wouldn't get because we did pay more for it.
Yeah, maybe we're grandfathered, but there's now an annual and monthly fee, or monthly fee, which I do not like at all. So, okay, there's another minus. You know, Duet works. I agree with John. It works better, but, you know, just be aware that you may have an annual fee to pay if that's what you choose to use. Of course, if you use it a lot, you know, if you are a mobile professional, it may be well worth that money to.
Well, and this might be the time, if you are getting asked to work from home, that you can get a little bit of money from your company to get your home set up to what you need.
Yep. I wonder if there's a tax break, too, if you know. Well, we'll find out. I should note, caveat, neither John nor I are tax professionals or certified in any way to discuss that. But something to consider when you talk to your tax consultant, preparer, accountant, whoever that person is. All right. Next up is cloud storage. This might seem obvious, but, you know, at home, cloud storage has become more and more common, and most people use one thing or another, whether it's iCloud or Google Drive or OneDrive, you know, a personal version with Office 365 or the free version or Dropbox or something like it. But in the Office, you probably have it chosen for you, whether it's Office 365 for Enterprise or Google Drive. What is that called? Google Drive Studio? No, not Studio. Whatever they call it for the group version. It may be chosen for you, but you may also still have like a local drive on your local area network. And I'm here to tell you that it may seem more convenient, you know, to have an attached drive, like an attached D, E, or F drive or something. But it does you no good when you're at home if you don't have a VPN connection or something happens to your VPN connection. And I really recommend you talk to your IT managers and say, hey, you know, I need to move to the cloud. What do you recommend? And can you help me if you don't know how to do it?
Mm-hmm.
And I know that's the advice I've been giving people. And when they push back, I'll say, well, you know, read my lips, move to the cloud. okay, John. So let's see. John, you use a NAS, as I recall, but you also have cloud solutions, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So I keep all of my working files in the cloud, and my archives and everything go on my NAS.
Mm. Okay. So you kind of, yeah. So if you don't trust the cloud, John has a backup to the backup, essentially.
Yeah. And I also use a NAS that allows me to sync cloud storage to it. Mm-hmm. So my NAS will actually keep a copy of my OneDrive contents backed up to it.
Yeah.
So that's very helpful to feel confident about what you have available to you in terms of data when you are not in the office or... You know, it's very rare that someone will ask me for something and I say I have to go home and get that for you.
Yeah.
It basically doesn't happen. If you give me enough time, I will get it from wherever I'm at.
Yeah.
Including if I have to SSH into a machine remotely and SCP it out.
And that, folks, is why you should have a cloud storage option.
Yes.
Because John knows how to do this stuff. I know how. But you know what? When you're in a rush, it's really not the best way to do it.
Yeah, I'll agree with you on that. It's not the time you want to be learning about SSH tunneling and everything stuff.
Yeah, let me rephrase that. It's not something you want to do for the first time during an emergency.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, necessity is the mother of invention, and I guess, you know, it can also be a good teacher, but it's a brutal teacher.
It's a brutal teacher. It's unforgiving is what it is.
I mean, I recall the 5 years that I spent doing network management for a small web hosting company, and I was the top.
Yeah.
So I remember many times going, if I don't fix this, it just stays broken. So I better figure out how to fix it.
And, you know, I'm looking at John's last line in our show notes to the topic he was just talking about basically, you know, the Boy Scout, you know, be ready kind of thing. And then and he says, again, what we're just talking about, basically don't be doing this at the last minute.
Yes.
You know, there is a good possibility that the next podcast or, you know, next couple of podcasts from now, John and I are in, we may both be in a locality that is locked down because of the novel coronavirus. So, you know, we're taking this stuff. We may be a little bit jovial in our discussion, but we're taking it very seriously, I think, trying to figure out how to do our jobs from where we sometimes do our jobs, but now doing it full time for some period
of
time.
Doing it for real.
Yeah.
Not just when we're sick or, you know, when something's up or we have to work from home.
Right.
Yep.
So, yeah, be like a scout. Be prepared. Girl Scout or Boy Scout or... What did they call them in the... Whatever they call them outside of the U.S., I forget.
Explorers, whoever they are. I think. Also, and the tip that I pointed out is, be kind to your coworkers, too. If you, you know, think about things a couple of days out, and if you have a
report, you
need something from someone in your work group, they might be able to get it to you in a half hour on a normal day when they're, you know, in the office down the hall, but... It might take them a day or two to figure out how to get it to you if they're not used to their setup. So if you know about things in advance, rather than say, I'll send that email to so-and-so on Thursday and they can get it to me Friday morning. If you have that thought Monday morning, you might send them an email. Just say, hey, I'm going to need this for Friday morning. Can you work on it? And they'll appreciate that much more than you giving them 24 hours notice when it might take them 12 hours to figure out how to do it.
Yeah. And, you know, the other thing is, going back to the previous topic, learn your group's cloud storage standard, is do that, because that will really help out with John's tip about, you know, notifying people ahead of time. Instead of emailing things, you know, if you are able to share the document directly from Google Drive or OneDrive or Dropbox or whatever, or iCloud or whatever it is your business has standardized on, it will be a lot easier for you than mailing, you know, multiple versions around. And you can't walk over to somebody because everybody's scattered and just say, hey, which version is the right one? And learn to use your voice communication, voice and video communication tools, and how to share a screen and all the basics. There's a lot you can do to get prepared. Basically, this is all about being prepared. And quite frankly, you know, there are some things I know I got to learn to do, or not just learn to do, but learn to do on a different platform, because Teams, Microsoft Teams, which is what I use at work, works slightly differently on an iOS device compared to a PC or Mac. So, you know, while generally all the features work, but they may not work the way you think they're supposed to work, like when you join a team chat or something like that. So, you know, figure out what you're going to be using and learn to work with that device, that platform, before you really need to. You just want to be ready. And yeah, for those of you already in a lockdown situation, not sure this was any help, but if you have anything you'd like to share with us, let us know. I mean, you know, most of the people listening to this know us personally, so they can just send us an email or a direct message or whatever the case may be, or to our fives of listeners.
We will figure this all out together. I've told a couple of people I always try to be optimistic, and I am going to be very interested in the data that we have from this, you know, outbreak, because, you know, as people pointed out, all of a sudden, a lot of jobs that your boss said, no, you can't work from home on that, you have to be in the office, all of a sudden, those are things that apparently you can now work on from home.
Yeah.
So,
in fact, you have to.
Curious. Yeah, I'm going to be very curious to see how we think about some of these jobs and how we think about, you know, telecommuting and the good things we learn, the bad things that we don't want to keep doing. So, yeah.
Yeah. And who knows, maybe we'll help the environment if we all stop driving and doing other things that use up fossil fuels. And I am guilty of that. John walks to work a lot, so he's not, generally speaking, not guilty of that.
I mean, I'll hold maybe one time a week, so it's usually only one direction. But still, I try.
Yeah. All right, folks, this has been MobileViews 321, getting ready for the lockdown. I'm Todd Agassar with my good friend John Westfall, and the good doctor and I will talk to you next time.